Can you hear me?
Okay.
I'm going to talk about brain tilings, dimers, and the quiz of gate theory. And I would like to thank the people I collaborated with, Sergio, Sebastian, Pavlos, Chris, Dario, James, Angel, David, and Brian. The work that I did was a result of collaboration with this group of people in various papers, and without their help, we wouldn't get to what we had, what I will show today. So let me start by giving general words about gate theories and string theory. They arise in many varieties, and I divided them into three different groups. You can either get them from pure geometry, something which is called geometric engineering. You can get them by placing vibrain probing singular geometry, or you can get gate theories by using sets of intersecting vibrains. And today, we are going to look at sets of intersecting brains and their relation to brains of singular manifolds. And let me do some reminder of things that were known before. And oops, there is a bug here. There's a missing line over here. So, and then another missing line over here. This is a set of... this is a set of intersecting brain configurations. They preserve eight supercharges. These are called brain intervals, and they give rise to, let's say, four-dimensional gauge theories with n equal to supersymmetry. And as a reminder, there are two universal fibers. I wish there was one here and one over here. And the four bone stretch in between them, these six bones provide flavor. Another set of intersecting brain configurations are called brain boxes. And here the matter fields arise when we take the five brains in between two sets of Nevesh-Barth five brains. They are placed in a chess-like fashion, and they give rise to matter fields, horizontal, vertical, and diagonal. And very important, we can also read off the superpotential terms. In general, superpotentials are a very hard problem to extract from intersecting brain configurations. And what we will show today is a solution of a problem of how to compute those superpotentials in a very generic fashion. The next progress in intersecting brain configurations was done by these people, brain diamonds. And here again we have a set of intersecting Nevesh-Barth five brains. And now the matter content arises in square shapes, and the superpotentials correspond to those clockwise arrows going in the clockwise direction and counterclockwise direction over here. Now, what we're going to do is to take all of these brain configurations and unify them into a new concept, something that we call brain tilings. And what this means is that we're going to look at periodic tilings of the two-dimensional plane. And some examples that we can very quickly think about. Again, I'm sorry, some of the lines are missing. This should have been checked. So one thing that we can think of is a periodic array of hexagons, or a periodic array of squares. And again, there is a missing line over here. But we can also take some more complicated situations. We can take octagons and squares, and we can take dodecagons, hexagons, and squares. Okay? And all of these configurations give rise to gauge theories in 3 plus 1 dimensions. And the way we would think about those is that all of these lines form a network of Navieshkar's 5 ranks, and on those faces that we see over here, we will put the 5 ranks giving us the gauge theories of interest. And the dictionary of how to get the gauge theories will be like that. A face would correspond to a gauge group, and if it is a two-n-sided face, it will have n flavors. An edge, which always passes through 2 faces, will correspond to a chiral multiplex charged under the 2 gauge groups associated to the faces separate. And a node can be any k-valent node. It can be 3-valent, 4-valent, 3-valent is what we saw in the case of the brain boxes, 4-valent what we saw in the case of the brain diamonds. This will correspond to a k-folder interaction term in the superpotential. And here's an example. The example that I chose is I chose this example because it's a particularly symmetric example. And it demonstrates what I just said before. A face here, let's say the face 1 here corresponds to a gauge group. There are 6 faces and there are 6 gauge groups. And arrows, the arrow 1 going to 2 is this arrow going 1 to 2. Every edge corresponds to bifundamental. And an interaction term, it corresponds to those black and white nodes with interaction terms going around the vertex, the intersection point. Now notice that I've denoted all of those brain intersections using white and black nodes, and the around white nodes, the arrows are going clockwise, and around black nodes, the arrows are going counterclockwise. And so the way those arrows are divided give a bipartite nature to the brain configuration that we have. Either you have clockwise or anticlockwise, and we denoted them by black or white. And so we're going to say that arrows are oriented in an alternating fashion. So next to an incoming arrow, there will be always an outgoing. Here is an incoming over here to the face 1. This is outgoing. This is this arrow is incoming. This is outgoing, and so on. Once you fix the first arrow, all of them are fixed. And this is the comment that I said before. The graph is bipartite. There's either clockwise orientation or counterclockwise orientation. And another comment that we would say is that black nodes are connected to white nodes only, and vice versa. Okay? Now, by itself, what we are seeing over here, this two-dimensional timing, is a surprise. Because using this formulation of faces, edges, and nodes, we are able to define a unique gauge theory with n equal 1 supersymmetry in 4 dimensions, corresponding to gauge groups, matter fields, and interaction terms. And what we are going to do now is to develop some techniques taken from Geimer in order to study the properties of those gauge theories. And one comment that we can say is that all odd-sided faces are forbidden because odd-sided faces will have uneven number of arrows coming in, different than arrows coming out. So this will violate anomaly conciliation. And so we are only restricted to squares, hexagons, octagons, and so on. White nodes will appear with a sign plus in the superpotential, while black nodes will appear with a minus sign. in the superpotential. And as I said before, these rules define a unique Lagrangian. Okay, so that's good. Let's see some examples. First example we can think about is a collection of squares, and you know, here these are squares. This is a periodic tiling which consists of only two faces, call them 1 and 2, and there are arrows, those green arrows, which give rise to those four bifundamental fields, and the interaction terms correspond to a quartic order over here, corresponding to the white node, and another quartic corresponding to the black node. Okay, and for those of you who are familiar with the conifold gate theory, this is precisely the conifold gate theory. Okay, another example is another simple tiling of the two-dimensional plane with hexagons, and with hexagons, this is the quiver theory for C3 mod G3. Again, we see three gauge groups, and if we follow the rules of what I said before, you write down this quiver, and there are six nodes superpotential terms, three with plus sign, three with minus sign. Okay. Next point is to talk about Euler's formula, since we're talking about timings of torus. We can assign a number of faces to number of groups, number of edges, number of fields, and number of nodes to the number of superpotential terms, and we get a relation which says that the number of superpotential terms and the number of gauge groups is equal to the number of labels. So that's one immediate consequence of that, and this turns out to be a generic relation for all gauge theories that live on D-branes probing singular geometries. Another point that we can discuss now, and this will be another surprise, is once you write down a quiver gauge theory, one of the immediate questions to look for is to find the monolith space of vacua. And naturally what we do when we are looking for the monolith space of vacua is to look for gauge invariants. We write down the set of all gauge invariants. We look for the S terms and D terms, and we write them as conditions, and then we are trying to solve for the monolith space. But now I will introduce some methods which come from dimers, some techniques which come from dimers, and this will be the second surprise of this construction. So the claim that I will make is that all quiver theories which arise from periodic timings have Calabi-Yau as the monolith space of vacua. And the way we will compute them is to use the Kastelein matrix, and I will show you how to compute this Kastelein matrix. This Kastelein matrix is just the adjacency matrix, it's actually a weighted adjacency matrix, between the white and black nodes. So in order to show how to compute this Kastelein matrix, we'll take an example. And we are looking at the tiling that we looked before. There are six faces over here. And if you look at the fundamental domain, which is bounded by those red dashed lines, we copy it over here, and it gives names to the nodes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Okay? And the Kastelein matrix just encodes how those nodes talk to each other. So for example, node 1 talks to node 2. Inside the fundamental domain, here's a link which goes inside the fundamental domain, will correspond to number 1 here. And there is another link to the node number 2, which goes outside the fundamental domain. And when we go outside the fundamental domain, there are two directions. We can go either in this direction or in this direction. So let's keep track of how many fundamental domains we go outside of. And so let's say that when we go to this direction, we will give a weight z. and when we go in this direction, we go away wg, such that if you go upstairs over here, to this fundamental domain, we'll have a weight w times g. Okay? And so this is what we are doing. We put the weight w here, because we go that way. 1 goes to 6, it touches 6 over here. This is inside the fundamental domain with weight 1, and this is outside the fundamental domain with weight z, and so on. And there are signs which are given such that if the order of the face is 0 mod 4, there must be odd number of signs along the face, and if the order of the face is 2 mod 4, we should give even number of signs. So we compute the Castellan matrix, and if you look at it, this is a very simple exercise to compute Castellan matrices. And what it gives us is the next step is to compute the determinant of this Castellan matrix, and we get a polynomial. It's not all of the minus signs. It's just frustrating. You get a polynomial where each monomial is represented by a lattice point. This is the lattice point minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, 0, 0, minus 1, and so on. So I can just represent this polynomial as a three-dimensional lattice like that. And I also get this number 6, which was the coefficient of the w to the 0, z to the 0 term. And this is nothing but the toric diagram of the Calabi-Yau manifold, which is the moduli space of Bhatia for this gauge theory that we started from. Okay? So that was the second surprise. So we are able to compute the property of the Cuvier gauge theory using those techniques that we borrowed from Dynard. Not only we get the toric diagram of the Calabi-Yau manifold, we also get this number 6, or in general, the polynomial here in W and Z will depend, we'll have some coefficients in front of each of the monomials. Those fields, these multiplicities, correspond to the multiplicities of the linear sigma model that describe the same Calabi-Yau model. So we get a bonus. We get an extra information from computing this Castellan matrix. So let's summarize now. What we have is we start with a brain tiling. We define using this brain tiling a unique Lagrangian, and using dynamo techniques we are able to compute properties of the gauge theory. Let's see else what can we do, and actually this is the comment that I wrote. What we have done here is to resolve a long standing problem of finding the gauge group or the gauge theory that lives on a D-brain that probes a singular manifold. Previously, it was very hard to compute the superpotential in such a case. And from the construction that we've done, is just by thinking about a two-dimensional tiling, we were able to solve, to precisely say what is the corresponding superpotential. So that's a very remarkable progress. The previous method in trying to find what is the gauge theory on a three-brain probing a singular manifold involved various techniques. We used intersecting brain situations. We used intersection numbers of cycles in the mirror geometry, exceptional collections, derived categories. All of those methods were not able to pin down the superpotential, and now using this timing, we just made this problem very simple. Another remarkable point about this tiling configuration is the behavior of the infrared fixed point. And at the infrared fixed point, what we will expect is that all anomalous dimensions, all beta functions would vanish. So here's a relation, again, we cannot see the equation. The sum of the R charges around every node should be equal to 2. That's the condition that at the infrared fixed point, all superpotential terms will have R charge 2. The second condition is that each gauge loop will have a zero beta function. This is just a realization of the NSVZ beta function for every gauge loop. So going around the phase, summing over 1 minus Ri, we should find the factor of 2. When looking at this relation, it's very tempting to multiply it by just pi. And now this condition becomes a very trivial condition. It's just a geometric condition which says that if we go around the node and we sum over the angles around the node, we should always get to pi. That's the first condition. And the second condition just says that the sum of angles around the face is a constant which depends on the number of edges. This is something we learned at the first year of our geometry. So the conditions for zero beta functions now get a very simple interpretation as just a simple geometric condition. And that's one of the signs which says that we are on a good direction. So here's an example. This is the brain tiling for the singularity, which is called suspended pinch point. And it consists of three gauge loops. And the condition that I just said before is just when you go around here, this is a node. It represents a superpotential. If you sum over all the angles, you should get 2 pi. And then the other condition, the NSVZ beta function, says that if you go around this node, you'll get some 2 pi. Another very nice feature is cyborg duality. How do we do cyborg duality? These are n equals 1 gauge theories in 4 dimensions, therefore there must be some realization of cyborg duality. And this is something, what you do is just replace this set of nodes by this set of nodes, something that the domino people, those which deal with dimers, call this urban renewal. Another feature that we encounter when we look at those brain tilings is whenever a node has valence 2. If it has valence 2, it would have a corresponding superpotential, which is quadratic. And therefore, it could lead to massive fields. And we typically, at the infrared, integrate out those massive fields. So when we integrate out, in the language of dimers, what it means is that we just collapse the black-white-black node into just a black node. And this is a simple way to integrate out fields. I'd like to introduce another concept, and that's the periodic quiver. It's the dual to brain tiling. And the nice feature about a periodic quiver is that when you write it down, every phase in the periodic quiver corresponds to a superpotential term. Just like in the brain tiling, every node corresponds to a superpotential term, here every phase is a superpotential term. And now we are ready to introduce the flow chart of what we have found, and we can begin with any of those circles over here. We can either start with brain tiling, and we can compute the quiver by just taking either the dual graph, getting the periodic quiver, or writing down the quiver gauge theory. Well, here, we also have the information about the superpotential. And on the other hand, we can, using the Castellan matrix, compute the torus diagram. And by this, we make the connection between the quiver gauge theory and its moduli space of vacua. So if you want to put a D-brain over toric singularity, you just need to know what is the brain tiling for it. And the rest is just to apply the algorithm that we have specified. So Diamond changed the way we think about quiver gauge theory, and does so in a very beautiful fashion. So let me conclude. What we have done is to make a connection between periodic tilings of the two-dimensional plane and N=1 super conformal field theories that arise on D-brains probing singular manifolds. We are able to compute the properties of the quiver gauge theories using Diamond techniques, and what I showed you is just one example of how to compute the moduli space of vacua, but we can actually compute more. I didn't have time to go over those things, but what you need to do is to study the techniques provided by domino tilings and translate them to the language of quiver gauge theory. And each time we are doing that, we find new, very nice results. As I said, we solved the long-standing problem of computing superpotentials for free-brain probing singular manifolds. And using those tilings, it's very simple, actually extremely simple, to construct infinite families of quiver gauge theories, like YPQ, LABC. I believe Dario Martelli talked about it in his talk, and possibly Martin Kuschensky also talk about. Another direction that we can take is to breaking conformal invariance by changing the ranks of the gauge groups. And Angel Wanga will talk about this direction in his talk. And finally, I'd like to point out that using these dimers, we found new connections with problems in combinatorics, people who are doing domino tiling, statistical mechanics, mechanical systems, people who are working with dimers, derived categories, and maybe more things. So thank you for your attention.